speaker is Terry Hamilton. He has a PhD from Melbourne University, Australia. He has previously worked for the IAEA at the Marine Laboratory in Monaco. He joined the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in 1995, and he was appointed scientific director for the Marshall Island Dose Assessment Radiocology Program in 2000, and this is also his current position.
Thank you. Good morning to you all. I would also like to start by thanking the organizing committee for this opportunity. I can already see this will be somewhat of a quite different discussion, in that I come from the other side of the fence. And in the case of the Marshall Islands program, it's very much science and science communication that ultimately, I believe, will lead to some sort of solution. This presentation would not be complete without some sort of background on the Marshall Islands nuclear test program, and I'm briefly going to go through that largely with a pictorial review. I'm then going to talk about revising the roadmap based on lessons learned, because there was many lessons learned through the 70s and 80s in relation to the Marshall Islands program. And then talk about the science which we believe will help support the decision to resettle. Winning back the trust of the Marshallese has been a long and difficult task. These impacted communities are ruled by societal fear of radiation. They also see themselves as really a conflict of interest between resettlement and, on one hand, and then trying to win over the US government for additional compensation on the other. The Marshall Islands nuclear test program began in June and July of 1946. These images were flashed around the world in a way of demonstration of the US nuclear testing capability. In all, there were 66 nuclear tests conducted in the Marshall Islands. 42 of those tests were conducted on Eniwetok Atoll, 23 tests conducted on Bikini Atoll. There was another test conducted about 150 miles or 150 kilometers west of Bikini. By far the largest and atmospheric nuclear test ever conducted by the U.S., and by far the largest contaminating event was the Bravo test of 1st of March 1954. Bravo led to exposure of people that were living on Rongelap Atoll, on Utrecht Atoll. There was also a Japanese fishing boat, the Lucky Dragon. The fishermen aboard there were exposed to fresh fallout contamination. There was some servicemen living on Rongerik Atoll. They were also exposed to Bravo. The Bravo evacuees, the people that were living on Rongelap and Utrecht, had to be evacuated to Kwajalein for immediate medical care. And in general, the Bravo event severely damaged relations between the US and the people of the Marshall Islands, and led to widespread condemnation of atmospheric nuclear testing around the globe. Bravo, over the years, has also contributed to a deep-seated belief that the US used the Marshallese as nuclear guinea pigs. Many of the people, particularly on Rongelap, where the highest doses were delivered about 1 gray to the whole body, between about 5 and 50 gray to the thyroid gland. Through this day, still receive a medical surveillance, and of course we do the environmental monitoring. There was also a lot of physical destruction of the reef. This crater here is part of the Bravo crater. It's not symmetrical because there was another test conducted, but the crater was about 1 mile, 1.5 kilometers or so in diameter. To give an understanding of the situation that we deal with on a regular basis in the Marshall Islands, it's important to understand the impacts of past events. And in the case of Bikini, Bikini was declared safe by President Johnston in 1968. There was then a program to resettle the Bikinians beginning in 1968, extending through to 1972, where they built new homes, they revegetated their main residence island of Bikini. And then in 1972, several families moved back to Bikini, only to be evacuated again in 1978, because when the coconuts started to bear fruit, they started to eat a lot of the local coconuts. The coconuts contained elevated levels of cesium. They're, in some many cases, the maximal permissible body burdens were exceeded, and U.S. authorities decided that they would need to evacuate the island. This, of course, led to more social disruption, adding to the public radiation hysteria and distrust of U.S. authorities. In terms of Rongelap Atoll itself, in 1978, the U.S. Conducted what was known as the Northern Marshall Islands Radiological Survey. And in 1982, they issued a report. The report was entitled The Meaning of Radiation for Those Atolls in the Northern Part of the Marshall Islands that were surveyed in 1978. Now, perhaps the report was well-meaning in that was published in Marshallese. Part of the problem was this was the first time that this atoll population group were actually hearing about residual levels of contamination on their atoll. Not only that, but they were seeing pictures with radioactive signs stuck all over the pages. So it's perhaps not surprising that they took fright to this information and then put out a plea in the early 1980s, soon after this report was published, to help them evacuate their island. And then in May of 1985, Greenpeace on the Rainbow Warrior aided the people to enter into a self-imposed exile. So in terms of understanding a culture ruled by the fear of radiation and distrust of US authorities, these events extended well beyond the hard facts of radiation. Holistic and cultural damages associated with community relocation, restructuring, and forced change. And the present situation is complicated by the complexities of many other issues and concerns and ongoing claims for nuclear compensation stem from claims for property damage to calls for expansion of the medical program, many different issues that still come up on a daily basis. And even today, this is the front page of the Marshall Islands Journal in March. We still take front page news in relation to the legacy of the nuclear test program. And of course, being a contractor to the Department of Energy, it's always rather distracting to have people holding banners in the back of the room. In this case, the acronym for the Department of Energy is Death on Earth. Rather difficult to deal with, because at least within the program, and it has been for many years, some very dedicated scientists and medical staff that have dedicated their whole careers to this program. So in terms of revising the roadmap, through the Rongelap Resettlement Act, the US Congress approved a grant to the Rongelap Atoll government for resettlement. And then in 1999, the DOE entered into a bilateral agreement with RELGOV, the Rongelap Atoll local government, that laid out shared responsibilities and assigned tasks for Rongelap resettlement. Those assigned tasks included establishment of an occupational monitoring program and capability on Rongelap Island, and also laid out a plan to provide a form of remediation to reduce exposure rates on Rongelap. What was significant about this, it was the first time that DOE had actively partnered with one of the local governments in trying to deliver services in direct support of resettlement. Now, these efforts expanded on recommendations put forward by an independent assessment conducted by the National Research Council in 1994. And since that time, DOE, along with us as the contractors, have been very proactive in responding to community needs, reaching way outside the agreed support criteria that was stipulated in these formalized MOU agreements. Now, a strong emphasis has been placed on developing a self-health regimen. We provide training, education, and employment for Marshallese technicians to help monitor the resettlement workers, and ultimately monitor the return of the population. And in attempting to reduce uncertainty in the long-term sustainability of the resettlement program by conducting scientific studies to assess future change. By far, our greatest limitation and challenge is in the area of communication, expressing the science of radiation in simple terms, and building a better understanding and public trust. What we have attempted to do now, over the pretty much the last decade, is meet with communities on a more regular basis. We've also developed a website where we provide free and open access to information, particularly the information coming from our whole body counting and bioassay programs. We attempt to publish our important findings in high quality peer review journals, and we've started a process over the last few years of publishing quarterly or semi-annual issues of a program newsletter that addresses more specific concerns that we hear from our Marshallese colleagues. So in supporting this decision to resettle, there is four or five different elements that give us some confidence in recommending to the Marshallese, and in this case, the Rongelapis, that we believe it will be safe for them to resettle. One deals with the whole body counting program that is managed by local Marshallese technicians. And what the whole body counting program, both in the past and present, is showing that conditions on Rongelap have changed dramatically. And I'm going to explain the reason for that in a moment. But what we see for the resettlement workers, and in this case we believe that the doses from internally deposited cesium in the resettlement workers does provide a measure of what we may see in the resettled community, have ranged between less than 0.01 to about 0.024 millisieverts per year. So very low doses. The reason for the level of internally deposited cesium dropping way out here is, of course, they moved off the island to Kwajalein in 1985. And then this data here represents the whole body counting data for just the resettlement workers. Another piece of work that we've been doing in support of the decision to resettle is we've gone back and measured levels of plutonium using urine analysis in former residents, resettlement workers, and compared that with the results that were measured previously. Now, these are results from 1991 to 1995. That's the best of the urine analysis data. The previous data to that was basically not very well QA'd, but it was released. And so what we now hear is part of the reason why the Rongelapese ended up leaving the island was that there was a claim that they were being exposed to high levels of plutonium. What our results based on AMS technologies and the sensitivity of the technique is now that we can pretty much say that levels of plutonium uptake on Rongelap are low and have always been low, in that many of the people that we measured in this cohort were also measured previously where they found very high levels, we find very low levels, which are not significantly different to what you might expect for people living in the Northern Hemisphere. The other element of the science program, which has been quite revealing, is that we've found that the effective half-life of cesium is about 8 years, or 8.5 years, compared with its radiological half-life of 30 years. So what this is driving is it may make resettlement much more plausible, far less costly, without necessarily doing anything, in that from 1985 through to the present time, this natural loss of cesium means that conditions on Rongelap are now only about 12% of what they were in 1985. And that's without doing any additional remediation. The other message is that we believe that we now have a good knowledge of cesium behavior in the environment. It turns out that what we see in scrub vegetation in coconuts in terms of that loss rate of cesium in the environment closely matches with what we see in the historical whole body counting data, as you might expect. So again, that gives us some confidence that conditions on Rongelap will comply with the safety criterion that they've established. And basically, by looking at this in a retrospective sense, what we can say to the community is that it's going to be okay for you to go back and resettle using your former lifestyle. The other measure or action that we've taken is that we've been supporting the idea that they do some remediation. And we've promoted what we've called the combined option. The combined option involves a limited soil removal and addition of crushed coral fill around their housing and village area where they spend most of their time, and then addition of potassium fertilizer in their agricultural areas to reduce the uptake of cesium into the local food plants. This gives you an idea of the effectiveness of the soil remediation work, basically we saw a reduction in external exposure rates from cesium-137 in the order of about eightfold. The other element to this is simply in terms of comparable risks and added benefits, and we've done this for all of the main residence islands impacted by the test program. For Rongelap, if they carry out the remediation work, they eat a mixed diet of local and imported foods. We estimate that their total exposure dose on Rongelap will be in the order of about 0.03 millisieverts per year. So their total dose from natural levels of radiation exposure plus the nuclear test related dose is going to be in the order of about 1.93 millisieverts, which is actually less than what people experience in the United States and Europe. So, and in terms of looking at the health, in real tangible health benefits, or what may lead to real tangible health benefits in the case of the Rongelapese, one of their main public health concerns is overcrowding. Their second most serious public concern is drinking dirty water. So the fact that they can provide, under the resettlement program, spacious housing and clean water in itself should lead to clear, tangible benefits in resettlement. So in terms of some summary points and recommendations, value high quality and defensible science. Get the science right, because it's so difficult to change perception once the information is in the public record. And that goes back to the plutonium bioassay data that was released back in the 70s. Impacted communities in the Marshall Islands want to be sure that their health will be protected and desire certainty and finality in remediation decisions. Often it gets back to trying to at least do the right thing and optimize as best you can what their exposure levels will be. Continuing interactions with stakeholders is of paramount importance. Take a proactive posture rather than being defensive. We've certainly seen that be a positive element to the program in recent years. Provide formal mechanisms for stakeholders to be seen and heard, in that we've had a formal MOU process that is reviewed periodically and they can provide input. We provide community meetings, we conduct workshops and other community outreach programs. Place a strong emphasis toward developing a self-help regimen and in technology transfer. Use transparent reporting platforms with open access to data and information. Risk communication has certainly emerged as the key issue in providing necessary assurances in support of the Rongelap resettlement program. Concerns as related to the Marshallese experience that are still ongoing, the language of radiation and the lack of clarity over radiation protection as standards, in that the US under the EPA have applied a very conservative standard for cleanup of Superfund sites of 0.15 millisieverts per year. The Marshallese feel that they should have the same cleanup standard applied. Years of social amplification of health impacts of radiation exposure, deep-rooted distrust of US authorities based on those resettlement decisions on Rongelap and Bikini, conflicting advice from local scientists and environmental groups, public perception that uncertainty and unlikely outcomes from radiation exposure are proof of lingering real-time dangers. So just in conclusion, In general, we believe that the data and information developed under the Rongelap Resettlement Program does provide a strong scientific foundation for supporting its decision to resettlement, to resettle. The final decision on resettlement still rests with the Relgav local government and the people of the Marshall Islands, or in this case, the people of Rongelap. And I think there's a certain irony in this photograph in that the houses are built, the lights are on, but in some ways, Rongelap resettlement is still in the dark.
Our next speaker is. He has a university master's degree in nuclear physics and is a qualified nuclear engineer. He works at the Nuclear Protection Evaluation Center in France since 1990, and where he has participated in numerous projects relating to implementing the optimization of occupational radiological